Well, hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 8 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Now, of course, we all know that number 8 is considered the luckiest numbers in China, but when it comes to the Bible, it's all about resurrection and regeneration, and thank the Lord for that, given the fact that we are male, pale, and stale. It's a great pleasure to welcome my fellow middle-aged old-timers, JC, Big Dave, and Eric Lingell. Boys, you're looking very chipper.
Eric number Lingell. Gouldy,
number 8, one of the great numbers in baseball lore, right?
Absolutely. Yogi Berra.
Joe Morgan.
Cal Ripken Jr.
Carl Yastrzemski.
Yeah.
It was the number I wore when I was a player in college and my brief pro career and for GB.
Hang on, JC, just rewind. Oh,
3 out of 4 ain't bad.
There's always a run.
I'm the black sheep of the number 8.
I'm just, you've put yourself in the same sentence as Yogi Berra, Cal Ripken Jr.
How I tried to slip that in? At the end, it was sort of like a last minute, maybe no one would notice.
Oh, we noticed.
We know this big guy. Always a pleasure to
have you. Waffle I'm doing the show already.
Oh, it's a chocolate waffle.
Today it's a half and half, a chocolate on one side. And
wow, that's going to melt.
Okay. Right, COVID update. Bad news, guys. First of all, Fernando has, I think it was on Tuesday night, Fernando Tatis has gone down. They announced, well, I don't know if he's been tested positive or he's been exposed, but he's definitely out as a result. Apparently crushed. The good news, particularly for Padres fans, is that Fernando Tatis Jr.'s diagnosis, he's asymptomatic. He's feeling fine. So we're expecting a pretty rapid return. Can't say the same about the New York Yankees, guys. 8 men out, only one player to date, Gleyber Torres, the shortstop. I think the rest are all backroom staff. What is going on in New York, JC? Can you provide us with any
analysis?
There you go.
And don't ask the guy in New York. Don't ask the guy in New York. Ask the guy in Colorado what's going on in New York.
Well, you know, with my 3 medical degrees, let me sort of just delve into it all. The reality is this is the price you pay for creating an expedited system for vaccination. And what the Yankees had done is that in order to get to their 85%, they went with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine rather than Pfizer and Moderna, which are the 2 other ones that are being used in the United States. And what's great about that vaccine, it's a single shot. What's bad about that vaccine is that it does not give you any form of immunity towards the disease for the most part. It's about 60% immunity, but around 40% where you still get it, but the symptoms that you get are very mild. So people are still getting it, even if you took the Johnson & Johnson, they're still getting COVID, but they're just not having the symptoms, but they're able to pass it on. And that's creating part of this problem.
The interesting thing here is that also once you reach that 85% threshold, my understanding is that then that allows you to sort of relax some of the COVID-19 protocols, which inevitably almost then creates the danger that you're going to start to see a spike. And as you mentioned, also the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has obviously had a part to play. But at the moment, it does seem to be focused on the backroom staff rather than the players. So from a Yankee perspective,
thank goodness.
But I mean, I guess the takeaway though, the takeaway, fellas, is that it's not really a health issue. I mean, most of these people are asymptomatic. I think only one of them had any sort of symptoms whatsoever. But the issue has to do with the way the protocols are. So you actually, like a Tatis, could potentially have COVID, and have no symptoms. But you're going to have to go through the protocol.
Yeah.
And that's one of the issues with the Johnson & Johnson is that it's going to create more players not being able to play, even though they're effectively healthy.
And you Josh, know that's not the takeaway, Josh. The takeaway is don't put anything in your body that was created by the owners of the New York Jets. I think that's the takeaway. Who are you kidding? I mean, I'm not taking – Woody Johnson wants to give me a vaccine? What are you, nuts?
Dave,
I can't even draft a quarterback.
Let's move on. Eric, Canadian border, what's the update COVID-wise? Are we still closed? Any danger the Toronto Blue Jays might actually get to play baseball in Toronto? Oh,
the Canadian border is still closed at the moment, take this as good news or bad news. The city of Toronto have announced that there'll be no rock concerts, no festivals, no public gatherings, no air shows till September. It's September 6th.
Wow.
That could be the beacon of hope that the Toronto Blue Jays will be doing that 1.5-hour drive from Buffalo across the Peace Bridge into Southern Ontario, back home.
Stretch run. That little threat September, running into the playoffs because they look good.
So, yeah. So, September 6th, for first home game for the Blue Jays back home in Toronto, maybe, and then playoffs afterwards. We'll see. Now, the one concern as well is that the Toronto Maple Leafs in the NHL have not won the Stanley Cup, let alone been in a final.
1967.
Thank you, David. Yeah. They are tipped as the favorites now. So, imagine not winning anything, let alone being in a final, since 1967. This could be your year, but you got to do it somewhere else. No fans, no victory parade. So imagine if this happened to the Cubs in 2016. You know, that would have been
hilarious.
So don't worry.
I'm sure as a Canadians fan, you're not too upset about that.
Don't worry about it. They'll choke in the first round. But that's your Canadian update. Moving on. Today, I'm going to give you a humdinger of a trivia question. Oh, I love this one, actually.
I like that word.
It's pretty much akin to, if I can quote a line from the movie Slapshot, hit him in the mind, coach. I'm going to hit you in the mind, coach.
Best line from that movie.
With this trivia question. Because in other news, Shohei Ohtani has been ridiculous as per usual. He's hit 11.
Well, he's God. Just call him God now.
He's fatigued. What are you talking about? He's
fatigued. And he still hits a home run. So he's fatigued from pitching.
That's what gods do.
He still hit one over the Green Monster.
You think God wasn't fatigued after the sixth day? He's still
by the way, did you see that home run over the Green Monster? Low and away, one-handed little smack, and he gets it over the Green Monster.
So if you haven't seen Shohei Ohtani's home run against Green Monster, is ridiculous.
I love it. It's Ohtani versus the Green Monster. It's like Godzilla versus, you know.
It's like Mothra, you know, exactly.
Mothra, right, yeah.
So my question to you is, I figure – I'm going to have fun with this trivia question today because we're loving seeing Ohtani from the shores of Japan doing his thing over here in North America. When I say over here, yes, North America.
In Dulwich,
North America.
So my question to you is, and this I'm going to give you four options here just to mess with your mind to make you go, and this is a simple one. Who is the first Japanese-born player to have hit a home run in Major League Baseball? Is it A, Hideki Matsui? Or is it B, Hideki Irabu? Or is it C, Hideo Nomo? Or is it D, Dave Roberts? Dave Roberts. You thought I was going to say Ichiro, right?
Yeah,
I did think you were going to say Ichiro.
But no, Dave Roberts, born in Japan.
You're really mind-bending today.
You're so happy with yourself. It makes me
happy
for you.
I am, very much so. And I'd be happy with a lot less interruption. Now, Hideki Matsui, Hideki Irabu, Hideo Nomo, or Dave Roberts, which of those four Japanese-born players were the first to hit a home run in Major League Baseball?
It's time for the news roundup. Okay, well, first up, it's official. Albert, as in Pujols, is now officially a free agent, boys. He has nothing to do with the Angels. Any danger that anyone's going to pick him up?
I don't see it.
To play baseball?
That's the idea, Dave. Yeah. We're a baseball
podcast. He already has his personal services contract with the Angels, so no one can pick him up to be like a, you know, host in the the luxury boxes. I don't see it happening. La Russa, who would have been the one guy who you could have seen potentially doing that because of his relationship in St. Louis, has already said we don't have a spot for him. We're not in the era where it's like the St. Louis Browns looking to fill stands and you bring in a guy just for the, you
especially
know,
without fans,
spectacle of it. Yeah, because you don't have fans and you don't have teams that would do that anyway. So I think it's going to be really tough for him to find a spot.
And there's precedence here as well, isn't there? I mean, Barry Bonds went searching. I think Manny Ramirez. Wow. It's tough. It's really tough to quit at the right time.
Those guys were blackballed.
I understand. But, you know, when you consider their achievements, you think there may be an opportunity, but there wasn't. They went out, put themselves out there. No one came calling. I mean, Big Albert hasn't been blackballed, but at the end of the day, he's just not doing it.
I read a really interesting story about his situation. And I think that when you want to get to the crux of what the problem was here is that the Angels were continuing to be relatively positive about Albert coming into the season. Madden had said he'd look more flexible. Albert was talking about how he'd gone on a diet and lost a lot of weight. They should have had a conversation before the start of the season to discuss expectations. They knew that Jared Walsh was potentially their first baseman of the future. They knew Otani was going to be DH, and they needed to prepare him for this coming into the year so that he could be mentally prepared for the role that he was going to have. And it doesn't sound like that conversation had happened at the right time.
Let me tell you something. When you start hearing your manager talk about diet and flexibility, it's over. Especially when you're that old, these are like telltale signs that you are on borrowed time. Yeah. Trust me.
He's eating a lot of fiber. He's more regular.
Yeah. Oh, his regularity is incredible. He's
Dave,
great
just,
this year.
Just before we move on, how's the diet going?
Well, it's going all right. I'm I'm eating fewer calories and I'm in the best shape of my career.
You're looking good, big guy. Okay.
You look more flexible.
I'm very flexible. That's what your wife told me.
It's a fair
family show.
Boom! Drop that mic.
David works blue after midnight.
I'm wearing blue for a reason, boys.
I'll tell you what, will that make the final edit? We'll have to wait and see. Okay, moving on. Jared Kelenic debut. Dave, are you, big guy? It's a monster home run in the Mariners' 7-3 win over Cleveland on Friday night. The boy's got what it takes, but he could be in a Mets uniform.
He, by the way, also added two doubles. I don't know if you know that. So, second game of his career, home run and two doubles.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a complete and total disaster. Thank God he's in Seattle, so we don't have to hear, he's out there. If you're in New York, that's about as far as you can get. Thank goodness. Good for him. I don't like to talk about fantasy stuff like you do, Gouldy, because I recognize that it's completely boring, but I will say that I did pick him up because if there's going to be this much pain associated with one player, I have to benefit from it in at least some way. So I picked him, and I kept him on the bench, and now he's hitting.
So just to clarify, you, Josh Chapman, and Eric Jansen all hate fantasy baseball, and yet you all play it. Moving on. Zach, please, Zach.
You don't talk about it all the time.
There's nothing more boring than there's nothing more boring than someone else's fantasy team. That's just rule number one.
Yeah, you told him.
Anybody would think that I talk about fantasy baseball and my team on a regular basis.
There's a reason for that, and it's because you talk about your fantasy team on a regular basis.
Moving on.
Did I mention double title winning season?
Moving on.
Okay. Moving on. Zach Plesac, almost with a no-hitter. I love this story, guys. This was on Thursday night. It got through to the eighth until I think J.P. Crawford came up with a hit, and then Dylan Moore hit a two-run homer. But they did still win the game 4-2 Cleveland over the Mariners. This is... Where are we now, Eric, in terms of the number of no-nos this season that was almost added to?
So that would have been the fifth no-hitter of the season. And bear in mind that the record for most no-hitters in Major League Baseball in one season is 7. So to have 5 already in mid-May just goes to show how dominant pitching is.
And that's not including the Mad Bum 7-inning no-hitter.
We don't include those seven innings.
And the great part of this story with Zach Plesac is obviously they were on the road and he forgot his road cleats. Did you know that? They had to send out the equipment guy. I can even give him a mention. I'll have to see if I can find his name.
Because he's listening to our show and he needs a name.
But he deserves it. The equipment manager was Brandon Biller.
I think
Brandon
his name was Frank Slutz, wasn't it?
No, Brandon Biller.
Okay. I once forgot my jersey for a game when I was playing for GB, and the GM had to get into a taxi and go 45 minutes away to get it and bring it back for me.
That's
horrible. Horrible.
Disgraceful.
Dave, I agree. It's one of the most embarrassing moments of mediocre baseball career.
Well, please, you may not know this, wears a size 13 and a half US shoe, and the equipment manager could only find a size 13 and 14, and he picked him up some black low tops. And according to Plesac, he rocks the high tops, but not the low tops. So it's extraordinary that he almost produced a no-no when you consider his equipment was clearly not up to standard.
What he overcame is just unbelievable. The obstacles, this is like climbing the mountaintop in a snowstorm, in a rainstorm, in a hailstorm. The guy had a shoe size a half too small. Whoa.
Okay, so you're not as impressed as I was.
David, this diet has made you even more cantankerous. I didn't think it was possible, but like you're next level, buddy.
This guy is—he's an inspiration to us all.
Dave, whatever you're on, people are out there ordering it right now. right, from one great pitcher to another, Corbin Burnes returns to the fold. As we all know, he was missing.
Not Corbin Benson.
No, Corbin Burns of Milwaukee, who has been absolutely legendary this season. If you've been lucky enough to have him in your fantasy team, tragically I haven't. Missed 15 games because of COVID, came back, this was this week, and has set an MLB record for the most Ks without a walk to start a season. It got broken up, the record, at 58 Ks, zero walks. He faced 126 batters, and he went to 16 three-ball counts, guys. 16. And avoided a walk. So, and this is extraordinary because he's overtaken the record set by Kenley Jansen. Of course, we all know Dodgers closer. So that was a closer, set that record in 2017. The next best from a starter was Adam Wainwright back in 2013 for the Cards, 35. His new record is now 58. He didn't just beat it. He smashed it.
He crushed it.
I think what's really impressive is you talk about that three ball stat. And usually in that situation, you're still taught, particularly if there are no runners on base, don't give in. So don't throw, you know, a lollipop over the plate just to make sure that you don't walk the guy. Still go with your best pitch, particularly in certain situations. And the fact that he did that, he only gave up five hits in that game in five innings. It wasn't that he was in those situations and capitulating to throw a ball over the plate in order to avoid the walk. He was still dealing. I mean, he's up there now. I mean, you got to talk about it. Maybe not DeGrom, but amongst the top two or three pitchers, four pitchers in baseball right now.
And yet coming into this season, he was being talked about as the number two in Milwaukee. And yet right now, he's got to be a serious front runner for a Cy Young Award.
Absolutely.
Do we agree with that?
He's not going to be the Cy Young Award winner, but you can talk about it.
Because you're on DeGrom's...
DeGrom, if he pitches again, which, you know, as a Mets fan, we're pretty prepared for him never to pitch again. But you know, if he pitches, he'll be the Cy Young Award winner.
Well, I love him. I mean, I think he has completely taken not just one step forward, but two step forwards from the pitcher he was a couple of seasons back. I mean, he is absolutely phenomenal. Somebody who is also focusing our attention on is our dear friend Akil Baddoo. A view to Akil. Our thanks to Craig. Great name for this little segment. So, Eric, what's happening to my buddy Baddoo? Is he still in the majors?
At the moment, yes, he is still playing Major League Baseball with the Detroit Tigers. Those of you who are just new to our show, we had to begin the season. We were in awe of Akil Baddoo, the rookie phenom for the Detroit Tigers, when he hit a home run on the first pitch at his first at bat on the first day of the season, then hit a grand slam. We are now entering exactly the 1 month anniversary since he last hit a home run in Major League Baseball.
Oh no!
And in the past week since we've been on air, AJ Hinch has already announced that he's going to bench Akil Baddoo whenever they're playing against a left-handed pitcher. So he's only had a handful of games this week, and he went 2-for-6 with one RBI, but still hasn't been sent down. We're still going to do a view to Akil Baddoo.
You know what the moral of the story is? Don't fall in love with small sample size. It'll break your heart every time. Every time.
Little regression to the mean for Akil Baddoo.
We'll still follow him if he goes down to Toledo Mud Hens, but hopefully it doesn't come to that. Moving on.
Okay, well, Dave, this one's for you, buddy. Your wonderful New York rant stirred the waters amongst particularly the UK baseball community, and there was actually a rebuttal issued on the...
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you see that on the Black Flips?
They came at me. I welcome them to come at me every time. I will crush them.
Okay, well...
come at me.
It was Russell Eason who wrote a rebuttal, and I picked out one line. They aren't evil, the New York Yankees, but that doesn't make them boring. So he's picking up on your issue that they're boring.
He couldn't even write his own headline. He had to rewrite mine.
You are gunning for a fight.
To be honest, Russell's a very good writer. He's done some sabermetric stuff. He's a smart guy. But he just took my argument, right? I made that argument 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, Josh crushed me on that first. So nice try, Russell.
We do like the guys at Bat Flips and Nerds. They're nice people.
I don't. I'm at full war with Bat Flips and Nerds. I don't like them at all. And if they come at me again, I will completely and totally crush them as advertised.
You're gonna kneecap them.
Bring it on. I have people over there in Lewisham who will handle it. And I invite them to keep trying.
Okay, well, okay. For those of you who are new to the show, it's David Langell wrote an article in The Guardian, and he had an epic rant here on the show about how the Yankees are boring now, and they've lost their mojo. But
and
moving on.
They said, the Yankees just don't do any of the NAF stuff. Like nobody loves a Hollywood bad boy, right? All the girls in high school, they're like, oh, I love him. He's so nice. No, they love the bad boy because the bad boy is so interesting.
They haven't been the bad boys since interesting the 70s. Anymore. That's the thing. When they had their the last dynastic run, they weren't bad boys in that way. I mean, maybe the front office, but certainly not the players.
A-Rod suing his own team. That's not bad.
No one called Jeter a bad boy.
Jeter gave away gift baskets
Women
for one night.
That makes him a good boy.
I think it's waffle time. I'm wielding the waffle again.
Okay, I just point out that Mr. Derek Jeter got up and walked out on a huff when I asked him a question at the 2008 All-Star game? Just a little reference. Russell Eason, by the way, just before we do close this out, he did admit that they have an identity crisis. The Dodgers are bigger spenders, and I think that was a fair point. One thing you may not have noticed, underneath his Twitter name, which is at R. Eason, he's written he/him, big man, on a big adventure in the big smoke. I think the Russell Eason is you, David Langell. I think he's your alter ego.
He forgot the one thing. The Yankees getting COVID this week is the most interesting thing to happen to them in like 3 years.
Okay, moving on.
Right, okay. From a genuinely fun item where we are just having fun to something slightly more, very much more serious, and that is British baseball making the New York Times, an article that has just been released. This is obviously rewinding to the story of the sexist tweet that was issued by BBF president that has caused him to resign. This tweet was out on April the 25th, and yet here it is making New York Times as an article. What's your input on this one, JC? Obviously a very serious issue, and one that's had quite serious ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, this story was heartbreaking from when it started. There was a tweet that was supposedly promoting women's baseball in the UK that showed clearly not a player, a woman either in a halter top or not wearing any sort of shirt, a batter's helmet and a glove. So it was clearly someone who didn't reflect anything to do with someone who knew anything about the sport, and it was supposedly trying to promote it, and it was clearly in bad taste. There was an effort on the part of a number of people to ask the BBF to pull it down. They did not do so, and for a while they ultimately did, but it took much longer than it should, and led to a lot of righteous discord on the part of the British baseball community. The timing is so bad because women's baseball is in a position right now in the UK to have a tremendous impact. It just, you know, women's baseball across the world is something that's developing. And here we are where Great Britain is out in front. And they have so many really qualified people like Doris Hocking who are involved trying to make the sport move forward. And here you have it's just a terrible distraction and incredibly disrespectful to the athletes, the female athletes who are playing the game. So I'm so thrilled that, change was affected. I'm thrilled that the vast majority of the British baseball community, not just people who play women's baseball, but all people who play baseball in the UK, really banded together to say, this is wrong, a change needs to be made. And I'm happy that the change has been made. And my hope is that moving forward, that the focus on women's baseball is towards what happens on the field and not these type of distractions.
The GM of Britain's national women's team, Amanda Hocking, resigned over this issue. I don't think she's taken back her role. I know a lot of people are hoping that she will. What's our thoughts on that? Because, I mean, that gives you a sense of just how serious this was perceived, the lack of immediate response and the sort of what almost seemed to be the lack of awareness of why this had caused offence and why it was an issue. Amanda Hocking, obviously, is very popular. She got support from Drew Spencer, the head coach of the British men's team. You've referenced support from other teams as well in both men's baseball and women's baseball here in GB. What's the likelihood that Amanda Amanda will say, right, take stock and go, you know what, I will take the role back. Because yeah. I think in the eyes of most, that's what they want.
Yeah, she goes by the name Doris, Doris Hawking, even though Amanda is her given name. But she's very involved with setting up the Women's League. So she has a huge portfolio already with women's baseball. My understanding is she would consider it. You know, obviously, I think everyone on the show would put our vote towards the hope that she will take that role again. Because by all accounts, I don't know her personally, but by all accounts, she is an incredibly able person who loves the sport so much and can bring so much to the game. Again, Great Britain has the ability to be a world leader in women's baseball. I really do believe that. I believe that there's the enthusiasm, the interest, and the focus. But one thing that any sport needs are able people to help that sport move forward. And so my hope is that she'll make the choice to take that role up again.
Yep, so say all of us. Anyway, let's move on. Eric, any thoughts just before we close up the news roundup?
No, let's move on.
Thanks. There you go. That's how you cut time off the running order. Fantastic. Right, well, second batter up to bat, boys, and it's a big story. The A's potentially relocating. Apparently, MLB have given their blessing to explore options for the Oakland A's to relocate. So the question to you, first of all, JC, I'll start with you. Is this just them playing poker, trying to put some pressure on the local community to fund their aspirations to develop the Howard Terminal, new stadium, etc.? Or is this a real potential problem that may end up with them relocating?
I mean, really, that one site is really the only shot they have to stay in Oakland. And I hope to all high heavens of the baseball gods that they stay there, because I love the two teams in the Bay Area. Oakland has, it's such a great baseball history there. I mean, they were such a successful team in the 70s after they moved to Oakland. There's so much texture to them playing there. But all that said, I do fear tremendously that this team's going to move.
I mean, they're talking about all sorts of options as to where they're going to move, Dave. I think Las Vegas is the one that seems to be at the top of the pile, but they're also talking about Austin, Portland, Nashville, Charlotte. There's all sorts of options.
I don't buy Las Vegas. People are kind of putting Las Vegas as the favorite, and I don't really understand that because they just renovated their AAA stadium, and they just poured a lot of money into the Oakland state, into the, you know, the football NFL stadium, and I just don't understand how people think that Las Vegas is just going to be able to pop up another stadium, especially when they just renovated the AAA stadium. No, I would say if they were going to go somewhere, it could very well be more like a Portland. I don't think they want to move them east because it presents problems with the divisions. But I would really, like Josh said, the A's belong in Oakland. they have a tremendous fan base. They're loyal. They're fun. They're in a bad ballpark right now, but that's kind of part of the character. You know, I love that. And I just hope that they can figure it out, because it is, they have a great history in that town. They're a good franchise and they should stay. They've already lost. They lost the Warriors to San Francisco. They lost the Raiders to Las Vegas. And this would be a third team, three teams. That's a lot of heartbreak for one town.
I think the other city to look at is Nashville. They have a number of people.
But is that too far east? Howard? I mean,
You're going to have to. Yeah, you're definitely going to have
to
realign. You'd have to realign to make that happen.
I don't think they want that.
But I think on the flip side, it's a good market for them because of its location relative within that part of the country. And I think that they have an ownership group, or at least a group trying to push for it right now, that is pretty strong.
Well, here's the thing, because I remember, you know, years and years ago, we've been covering spring training and going to hang out with the Oakland A's, which of course was always my favorite club. They were so open and they're so helpful. One of my favorite mom and pop shops, basically, if you will, in Major League Baseball. And I remember we're 15 years, there's always been talk about them moving. There's always some of them relocating. And the biggest one that came close was they were going to move to San Jose, which is still, okay, not in the Bay Area, but it was south of San Francisco.
That's
still
where they should go if they're going to go.
But it was the San Francisco Giants who blocked that move, because then that would have been Giants territory.
Yeah, but guess who gave them that territory?
Speaking as somebody who has had a team relocated, which is heartbreaking, which is devastating, which wreaks havoc on a community. Of course, being a Montreal boy, it was devastating seeing the Expos leave town. But at least I had a short upbringing in Southern Ontario, fell in love with the Detroit Tigers, so I had a team to fall back on. not many people have teams to fall back on. And it's not the same. People say, oh, I guess you must be a Nationals fan now that they moved to Washington. No, I didn't grow up in Washington, D.C. So it's like,
I want to hear how it wreaks havoc on friendships. That was just an interesting line.
I don't know, because basically it was something to bond over. It's something like, you know, that bonded okay. families that kept, you know, you'd meet friends that you would normally wouldn't see in other walks of life, but you would meet at the Olympic Stadium, for example, or at a baseball game. And here's the thing, success, you think of the success that the Oakland A's had over the years. How can you move a franchise that's, you know, that's already had an established history in the area? Well, don't forget, they were the Philadelphia Athletics at one point, who have won World Series and then moved to Kansas City and then moved to Oakland, where they are now. But there are other clubs as well, such as the Washington Senators, the original Washington Senators, who moved on to become the Minnesota Twins. They won World Series and got relocated. The Boston Braves, the Milwaukee Braves, now the Atlanta Braves, they all won World Series in each other's respective cities, as did, as we know, the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants. So winning a World Series in the city that you live in doesn't guarantee that you stay there. But let's hope that does stick with the Oakland A's.
I just want to clarify something that I just said. Okay, in 1990, Bob Lurie wanted to move the Giants to San Jose. And Walter Haas, who was the owner of the Oakland A's, in the best ring of baseball, granted them permission to do so. But what he didn't realize that he was giving that permission in perpetuity. And so now it's held against the A's. Now it's seen that in the Constitution now that the Giants own the rights to San Jose. The Giants could give the A's the rights to San Jose. They could do it, but they don't because they want them out of town so they can eat all their lunch.
And I say it's only a half hour commute from downtown San Francisco to the other side of the Bay in Oakland. If you take the BART, the Bay Area Rapid Transit, and that, that, you know, it should stay in that area. And one final note, another reason why I love the Oakland A's, we're talking about media. Whenever you go to the media press room, some stadiums would actually have a huge, you know, spread, a nice hot meal layout, a cafeteria. I'll never forget this, the Oakland Coliseum. All they had was a loaf of Wonder Bread, a hunk of mustard, and a stack of Oscar Mayer bologna.
That's what you get, baby.
With a post-it note saying, help yourself. And that was, which I found endearing.
I'm sure you did, by the way, Eric.
And I did, yeah, because but I asked for mayo as well.
That's big league circa 1953.
And that's why Billy Bean saves the money. Moving on.
Okay, I'm going to close this article out just by referencing, and I'm sitting on the fence here, guys, but because I don't want them to move. I've got huge, huge affection for the Oakland A's. But the reality is we know that the Coliseum isn't the prettiest. It's never ranked higher than ninth in AL attendance since 2005. The A's have never ranked higher than 17th in payroll in the last century. As a result, they make the playoffs on a regular basis, despite that low payroll. They never go anywhere. They never get beyond.
But that's partially because of the stadium. You know, give them the new stadium and it could change everything.
You know what else? And Major League Baseball said, this is what they said. MLB thinks that the A's can't be competitive in that stadium. And I'm like, have you guys checked the standings in the last 10 years?
Yeah. Well, the lease runs out in 2024. So obviously a decision is imminent. But we wish Oakland and the people of Oakland well, because obviously we definitely want them to stay. Okay, moving on. Third batter. Up to grabs, the de-juiced baseballs. We talked about this at the top of the season, that there was a rumours abound. There doesn't seem to be any question the rumours are true. A simple stat, since 2019, home runs are down 8%. There's a lot more to this story, but it seems to be, for the first quarter of the season, proof, as if it's required, that they have de-juiced the baseball. But the trouble is, JC, it hasn't created the end result they were looking for. Can you expand on this, please?
Yeah, there was a great article in Fangraphs that we can add onto our various social media sites that looked at launch angle and exit velocity and how many home runs have occurred this season compared to 2019. And what we're seeing is that even at the same launch angle, so, you know, the same angle towards a home run and exit velocities, home runs are down, which suggests the ball is the differential there. And the interesting sort of flip side to that is the suggestion is that the ball is actually a little bit more springy I mean, not like, you know, super Super Bowl springy, but a little more springy. And the suggestion is that if hitters started to hit more line drives, that the ball would carry on the line more, and there'd be more of a chance for doubles or really hard hit line drives for base hits that could beat the shift. I think it's interesting. It suggests that Major League Baseball is trying to figure out, you know, we've talked about all the other ways in which they're trying to re-engineer the game in order to make it more exciting and more attractive. And they're trying to use the ball to do that. The only issue here is that players aren't changing the way they approach. So they're still hitting, you know, they say insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again with the same result, right? And that's what hitters are doing. They're not changing their approach. They're still hitting with the same launch angle. They're still getting the same exit velocity. They're not getting the home runs. And while some of those are turning into doubles, a lot of them are turning into outs. And that's one of the reasons, one of many factors that we're seeing record lows in offense right now.
So, Dave, I'm going to get you to pick up on this. What JC has just been referencing, really, exit velocity. They focused on a particular area. Exit velocity between 100 and 104 miles per hour and a 20 to 24 degree launch angle. And these are the numbers, big guy. In 2019, had you fallen into those two categories, 59% would be home runs. Now, only 26%. Only 18% of those hits would have been outs. Now, 32%. So the intention was to create a more fun game with more singles, doubles, triples. In reality, all it's actually done is create more outs. And that ain't fun.
No. And I think a good example of this are the Rays, who last year hit 238. Now they're hitting 219. Arozarena, who we always talk about, name sounds great in an Australian accent. He struck out 48 times already. But more importantly, they're hitting. They're still swinging for the fences every time out. And that's what their club is built to do. But now they have a different ball, and perhaps it's not working like it used to. Their home runs have slipped dramatically. They've gone from like 7th to 11th in the league, and they can't score. And, you know, one thing I will say is, man, I wish one way or the other we could just figure out this game, because to continue to talk about switching the ball, trying to figure this out, I mean, every year it changes. And I would just like to find some consistency in the sport one way or the other, hopefully in the way in, you know, moving runners and, you know, base hits and balls in the gap. I would like to see the sport going that way. But it's not going well, and it's so inconsistent year on year that it kind of gets frustrating as a fan and as a journalist.
You know, what's interesting is that I've talked a lot about baseball as a sport of adjustments and hitters need to make adjustments. It's hard at the major league level to do that, right? You've taken an approach, you've built a swing to get you to what is expected of you at that level. And when what's changed is to swing a different way, it's very hard to break it down, particularly midseason. So the people who really actually need to be making changes, if I were a smart GM or front office guy, is to look into your minor leagues and look at the players. Like McKinstry is a good example with the Dodgers. Guys who maybe aren't superpower guys, but more gap hitters, bring those guys up and see if they play. And that sucks for the players who've been built on launch angle, and they're going to need to make changes at some point. But maybe it's really front offices that need to really look at their personnel at the lower levels and see who might play better at the big league level.
Agree.
Okay. Well, it's a story that's certainly going to run and run. And the sad thing is, if it doesn't enhance the interest of the fans at the end of the day, that's going to be the deciding factor. But big story. Thank you, guys. That's our three batters of the day. We're moving on to the seventh inning stretch.
For my second shot, so it's hard for me to do that. Is anybody else's arm hurt?
Oh, poor guy. Oh,
my arm hurts. I can't do this.
Did you have to get size
stretch.
13 cleats?
Oh, I pitched almost no hitter in my small shoes. I'm amazing.
Hang on, I am so much older than you. How come you've got a second jab and I haven't?
Because we live in the United States.
So you paid for it.
I live in a real country, baby.
And just USA,
USA, USA.
In the hole.
David has made more enemies on this show than all our shows.
I'm a real patriot.
Just for the record, I'm double jabbed as well. Double Pfizer.
Oh, congratulations.
Moving on.
Congratulations.
Baseball book of the week. Now, I was listening to a podcast the other day with James Holden and some other bozo, and it was mentioned on that podcast, Behind Home Plate, I believe it was called, baseball book, because we are now reaching a point of the season, a quarter into the season, by the way, that it is a grind. Major League Baseball is a grind. If we're only at the quarter point of the season right now in the 162-game schedule, what more appropriate book than to recommend than The Grind by Barry Sferluga. Now, Barry Sferluga, which is a very interesting last name, he is a Washington Post beat writer for the Washington Nationals. And he basically wrote a whole book on how grueling a 162-game schedule can be while following everything that's anything to do with what has to go in the ins and outs from pitchers and catchers reporting the spring training in February to another month of spring training to the entire regular season. And if your team is lucky to make it to the final, you're looking at November. Now, 162-game schedules in
7 months.
Is paid in 182 games. And that's without making the playoffs. So the book actually goes over what entails for everybody from the GM, the players' wives, the clubhouse guy, the physios, basically everything that you would never think behind the scenes of how much of a grind 162 games. Now, this is the 60th anniversary, by the way, of Major League Baseball adopting 162-game schedule. It's 1961. Oh, wow. It got changed to 162 games. Prior to that, it was 154 since 1904. So just adding 8 games to a regular season doesn't sound like much. But don't forget, now we've got expanded playoffs to make the grind even harder. And a little interesting anecdote, Adam LaRoche was mentioned in here, that bulk up prior to the season, because by August, every player pretty much loses 15 pounds from the grueling, arduous, well, I guess unless your name is Bartolo Colon, but...
Or Prince Fielder,
yeah. But it does the wear and tear. There is no other sport anywhere in the world that has a grinding schedule like baseball does. You can't name one.
But Eric, and all that standing.
Yeah, you know, honestly, the physical part is a little secondary to the mental part. When I represented players, that was the biggest transition that every single one had. Going from short season, which is the longest I ever played a season, was about 60 games, to a full season minor league. And the mental approach that you need to have to be able to turn it on every day, that was a real differentiator between players who made it to the high minors and the majors and players who burnt out in full season A.
Totally. And by the way, the book, The Grind, like I said, by Barry Sferluga, Inside Baseball's Endless Season, also has Tony Kornheiser from ESPN saying one of the finest baseball writers around. So if a grumpy mother like Tony Kornheiser,
he is a grumpy mother.
Gives you like the kudos to one of the finest baseball players.
Read the grind.
That's it. We're moving on. Baseball intertwining to pop culture. We're going to go into television now. And we're going to talk about, I mentioned last week that Tommy Lasorda appeared on an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond. And then I thought, actually, you know what? There are many baseball references about in the TV show Everybody Loves Raymond. And did you know that not everybody loves Raymond and not many sports writers like the show Everybody Loves Raymond? You know why? Ray Romano, who plays a sports writer on Everybody Loves Raymond, in New York. He's just, all he does is he bitches and moans about how life is with his family and his parents living across the street. And you actually never really see him, traveling, doing his beat writer stuff. And that's why sports writers don't like him. But the show does have like these odd cameos. You do have Barry Bonds making a cameo in one episode. And there's one episode where he actually has to go in and to see the 1969 Mets. And they're all there. Like he goes to like some sort of convention where they're all doing like a signing, and Ed Crane pulls there. And I'm surprised, Dave, that you've never watched.
You know, Everybody Loves Raymond. Never been into it. Never really. I just never got into it. I didn't even know that he was a sports writer. I know very little about that show. It's kind of like a CBS Altacocker show, like kind of like old, for older folks. You know, I'm so young and vibrant. You know, everybody loves Raymond. Maybe not for me.
Well, Dave, yeah. I hate to tell you this, but the Rolling Stone magazine, which, you know, highly rated, decided it was the 35th best sitcom of all time.
Maybe I should look at it. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, it's
I just thought nothing measured. You know, when it came out, it was kind of like, I think either around or after Seinfeld, and just Seinfeld could not be topped. So I was like, why bother?
Well, you just got the whole, they reunite the whole 69 New York Mets on in one episode. What more do you want?
That's very exciting. I'm disappointed I missed it.
I personally, the father in the show is brilliant. That was my
Peter favorite. Boyle, great actor.
That's it, yeah. Peter Boyle. Absolutely.
Was Nolan Ryan there, Eric? Was Nolan Ryan there, the 1969 World Series?
No, that's easy. Nolan Ryan? He was too busy with the Texas Rangers.
Oh, he was too busy, okay.
But of course, you know, don't forget, like, it's
there's a touching scene
where he actually, at the end of that episode, he sings Meet the Mets with his brother.
That's nice. There are a lot more verses to Meet the Mets. A lot of people don't know that.
Please
it goes on for
now.
A very long time. You should check out the extended lyrics for me. Maybe we should post them on our webpage. The extended lyrics of Meet the Mets. They start going on about the train and the baker and the
Mets. Dave, why didn't you just sing the song and we'll post that?
I don't know
instead.
All the lyrics. I don't know all the lyrics offhand, but it's a very long song, actually.
All there you right, go. Yeah. That's another fine example of pop culture and baseball intertwining. Everybody loves Raymond. Take a look. Moving on. Trivia answer. Have you guys thought about my humdinger of a question where I asked you earlier about who is the first Japanese-born player to hit a home run in Major League Baseball? And I give
I've
you
thought
options.
About it.
I've got a guess.
I've given you the options of A, Hideki Matsui, B, Hideki Irabu, C, Hideonomo, or D, Dave Roberts. Now, Dave Roberts was actually Japanese-born, born on a military base in Japan. And of course, I threw two pitchers in there just to mess you with your mind. And one of the finest Japanese players was that a red herring? Who knows?
Yeah, Irabu, the fat toad.
I think he played predated interleague, so I don't think Irabu. Right. But I think Nomo was the first really successful Japanese pitcher, and he was playing in the National League. So I would go with Nomo.
Interesting. Okay. Johnny Gould, where do you use your?
I'll be honest, guys. I haven't got a clue. I mean, I only came up with one name before you reeled off the four potential ones. Normally, I can come up with at least a couple that you say. So indicative of the fact that I'm clearly out of my depth.
Well,
so
guess.
So
Dave Roberts.
Dave Roberts.
Oh, thanks. You just took the one I wasn't going to take. Thanks a lot.
Take it. You guys
just take one.
No, I think it's Nomo, actually. He was around for a very long, as Josh pointed out, he was around for a very long time. He's a National League pitcher. And I think he was a pretty decent hitter, actually.
He predated Dave Roberts. And a little fun fact, I played against Dave Roberts in college. He played at UCLA.
Oh, yeah. He's that old?
Yep, he's that old. I know, crazy.
Fantastic.
What's the answer? Let's go.
So the answer is Hideonomo was the first Japanese-born pitcher to have hit a home run in Major League Baseball.
And what did hit a
not just the first Japanese pitcher, the first Japanese
born pitcher. Yes.
Born player.
Player, period.
Yeah,
exactly. Because there was no influx of Japanese players until the mid-90s, you know.
Well, Murakami is the first one. The reliever was
correct,
the giant,
in the 60s.
Yeah.
And he was really good. Only lasted two seasons, but
I think you need to roll it back because I think I've gotten like four or five in a row now. I've had a good run.
By the way, Nomo has had four home runs in his
and
career.
Also Nomo had two new hitters. Can I also add one of them being in an unlikely place called Coors Field in Colorado?
Oh,
so
wow.
Getting a no hitter.
Yeah,
it's still
the
only no
it, right?
The yeah. only no hitter in Coors Field. It was done by Hideo Nomo.
Nice. OPS for Hideo Nomo, 348. Not bad.
I don't care. Moving on.
Okay. Well, thank you for all that. In the seventh inning stretch, I took full advantage to top up on my popcorn and beer, and also to check out the mailbag, guys, which is what we're going to be doing first of all. Huge thanks to Darren Stevenson. He measured in. Does Miguel Cabrera make it to 3,000 hits? I think we did touch on this at the last show. Or is he destined to face the same fate as Albert Pujols?
He's just surpassed Omar Vizquel. I believe he's got 130 more to go to get to 3,000. It'd be nice if he just gets another 30 and gets to 2,900. Even that, I think, is a big ask.
Your point about passing Omar Vizquel is actually very historic. He's now had the most hits in the major leagues of any Venezuelan player ever.
Hey.
So that's certainly something worth tipping your cap to.
Yeah, but we love Miggy as well. Mark Jones, which one of the three from Kevin Biggio, Bo Bichette, or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will go on to better their father's numbers? And
I love this question, can I tell you? Because Vladdy Jr. is, in my opinion, the best of the three players, but his dad was the best of the three fathers.
Yeah.
I mean, you might say Biggio. I think Kevin Biggio is not going to surpass his dad, so he's the least. But the question becomes, Bo Bichette, Dante was a good player, but Bo could be better than him. So I think I'd put my money on Bo being better than Dante, but Vladdy Jr. being better than Bo.
Especially after his weight loss. He looks great. He's in the best shape of his career.
Yep.
Guys, this isn't a question, but it is deserving of a mention. It's a tweet from Stats by Stats. After his walk-off RBI tonight, Patrick Mazeika of the Mets now has three career RBIs, but zero career hits. He's the first MLB player to have three RBIs before he got his first career hit since Cincinnati's Joe Brevere did it in 1955. How about that for a cracking stat?
Wait, the first two were walk-off. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Two were walk-off. He didn't hit the ball out of the infield, and they were both walk-off hits. True story.
Also, very quickly, Mike Dowling, of course, is out there fighting with Charlie Baldwin for being rated the number one San Francisco Giants fan in the UK. He messaged me direct to say what my thoughts were, asked me what my thoughts were about this idea that we touched upon with the minor leagues that they're trialing about basically using technology for the strike zone instead of relying on the home plate umpire. Mike's an old traditionist, a bit like ourselves. He doesn't like the idea. He loves the idea that strike zones vary depending on the home plate umpire. What's your thoughts, JC, as a man who played professional ball?
Yeah, I mean, historically, I've been really in that category, but I'm seeing more and more umpires struggle. And I'm starting to wonder whether we might want to give it a try and give it a look. I know VAR has, been such a nightmare in football, but I think of all the things we're doing in the minor leagues to sort of try out, that's the one I'm most interested in seeing how accurate it is, more than, expanding the bases or changing the rules for pickoffs and so forth.
Well, if you wanted to shift the strike zone down, the most efficient way to do it would be with electronic umpires, because there'll be no resistance. It will be factual. And, there won't be, any umpire in any interpretation, because it will just be done. Having said that, I know Keith Hernandez has been very happy with the umpiring this year. He says the calls of balls and strikes have been excellent. So whatever Keith says, I'm with.
Okay, just before we go, Eric, there was an MLB food fight. There's a poll going on where they're matching up ball ground meals against each other to come up with the favorite. I went and had a look, and they haven't even got any reference to the legendary ballpark food in Baltimore. What's your thoughts on this MLB food fight that we're being asked to vote upon?
Exactly. I'd like to thank Tris for actually posting that on our Facebook group, that MLB poll, which I actually am appalled about, because it's none of the signature dishes of all the ballparks we've all been to were on there. And for example, the Blue Powell pit beef, the Camden Yards crab cakes were phenomenal. The foot long in hot dog in Wrigley Field is one of the best hot dogs in Major League Baseball, I add. But speaking of hot dogs, something that's really upset Josh, which we've discussed this off camera, is apparently there's been an announcement that there shall be no longer the original Dodger dogs being served at Dodger Stadium, Josh.
Heartbroken. Yeah, Farmer John's. Anyone who listened to Dodger games on the radio would always be sponsored by Farmer John's. They're Dodger dogs. Yeah, I mean, I hear Vin Scully's voice echoing in my ear saying Farmer John's. And those hot dogs to me are just the physical embodiment of my childhood right there. It's a Dodger dog at Dodger Stadium. When you got to go to the yellow seats, which were like the lower box seats. It was like, that was the magic of childhood right there. And so I'm sad.
This is how we know Josh is not from New York, because in New York, we don't do pork hot dogs. We only do beef hot dogs. Pork hot dog would not be acceptable in New York. Therefore, Farmer John's would never make it at Citi Field at Yankee Stadium.
Honestly, none of those dogs are made of pork or beef. They're made of unspeakable things that you don't want to know. It doesn't matter what
can you describe that in any more detail, Josh?
I would make us all ill in the stomach if I were to get any more.
It's still a square meal and part of a very well balanced diet. Leave it alone.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much to everybody that got in touch. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. Johnny and Joshua, whether that be on Facebook, whether it be via Twitter. Don't forget, we've also got other affiliated programs. Behind Home Plate, of course, which is the fantasy baseball pod that I'm doing with James Holden, and that's at BHP Pod. We'd love to hear from you on that. We've also got Slapshot Smack Talk, and that is at Slapshot Talk. The Twitter handle on that, of course, is Eric and any other random individual in South East London that's willing to talk NHL. And there's also the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show, because obviously we're all part of the Ted Fred stable. Do check us out, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and subscribe, like.
This is where the pointy dance.
Screen. Hey, I did that. I did that without even being asked.
Exactly. So this is the part where we need you,
because I've had a second jab. It's hard for me to do this because of my second jab.
For those of you watching on YouTube, this is where you have to click on that icon there or there. Click like. You click subscribe, and then you get the bell notification. We need you to click like and subscribe on all the platforms. Otherwise, this show will cease to exist.
I'd just like to point out, by the way, that obviously we went off air from Channel 5 Baseball back in 2008. I personally cannot experience a second rejection. So please hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. I'm an old man.
If only to keep Johnny Gould alive.
Exactly. Guys, what are you up to? Another hour flies past. It's an absolute joy to have your company. Anything exciting to look forward to, JC, later today?
I'm playing for the ship. It's championship night at my curling club. Wow. And my team is in the Thursday night championship game. So
Do you drink beer while you curl? Is that part of the scene?
I'm a serious athlete, man. No,
drinking beer.
I will tell you, obviously drinking is a huge part of that culture, but I promise my kids, I have to drive 15 minutes there. I won't drink and drive. So,
I come home to drink alone,
which is what I do.
If you didn't have to drive, would you be drinking during curling? Just curious.
Not during, after the game.
Copy that. Thank you.
Can I just ask why it's a Thursday night competition and it's happening on a Saturday?
It's championship Saturday, and all the leagues, the championship game is played on a single
day.
It's
all about TV, Johnny.
So, exactly. We get better ratings. Yeah. Though I will tell you, if you go online on the YouTube, Denver Curling Club, you can watch, not this game, but we have a lot of previous games on there. Really good YouTube channel for it.
I tried that and I got a porn site came up. So I was very disappointed by that.
I think you misspelled Denver Curling Club.
Oh, okay. I might have done. Thank you.
Got your rocks off, right?
Okay, I want to take this opportunity to apologize to all our listeners for David Lengel. We have no idea what that vaccine second jab has done to him. But thank you for joining us. An absolute joy. I haven't laughed this much for a long time. We look forward to having your company next week on the Johnny and Josh Show. From us all, thank you and good night.